Talking with TD.
Talking with TD. Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, you are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. It is a great opportunity. As we get through the roster cuts and the initial 53-man roster, we'll get into that. Some surprise moves there. We'll have Chris Sanders to come on, see what surprised him, and see what he thought of the Josh Gordon addition. How about it? Got David James over there hitting the switches,
yes,
making this thing work. And I think it's time. We'll start with one of the biggest moves and just a couple things on the news side of things, right? The Titans put Racy McMath on IR. He had a hip injury that he was dealing with, and they signed Cody Hollister to the 53-man roster up from the practice squad. And with that open spot, Josh Gordon, he worked out for the Titans on Wednesday, and they signed him on Thursday. And an interesting addition there. So we'll see how that works. But along those lines, as far as some house cleaning, they also redid Derrick Henry's deal. And it increases his pay to $14 million this year, which is up from $12 million, as per Jeremy Fowler. And that includes $9 million in a signing bonus. He's still going to be a free agent in 2024, but this just gives him a little bit more money and it added some void years to the contract for cap space. So that's the deal with that. One of the guys that they did cut, though, was Brett Kern, and that was to sign Ryan Stonehouse and – or, yeah, like to have him on the practice. We'll get it together. Have him on the 53-man roster. That was to get that done. And it's an interesting move because Stonehouse, I will say, he has a tremendous boot on him. I watched him kick punts from 60 to 70 yards, and there were times where I don't care who was back there, Kyle Phillips, Mason Kinsey, Treylon Burks, they all struggled at times to catch some of these booming punts. And it's really cool, like, to be able to boom the ball like that. But you want to make sure that you're not putting it up there with too much hang time because that, because that won't allow the coverage to get down there and make things happen on the returner. The other thing you want to be able to do is have that directional ability. And that's something that he showed a bit, I will say, against the Cardinals in that final preseason game. He had a couple that went down inside the 10-yard line. But make no mistake about it, when it comes to corner kicks and, you know, putting that little spin on it just to be able to, the English on it, right, to make it go down inside the 5-yard line, there aren't many that could do it like Brett Kern. And I remember talking to him about that, and it was, this was what, 2-3 years ago. He told me that golf is a lot like, or putting is a lot like golf. And I was really intrigued by that. And he was talking about how you have to know which iron to bring out for which situation. I remember before the Rams game, Sammy Heckler was a guy that he punted for the Rams, obviously. But the big thing was the watermelon punt, the way he would drop it like the watermelon before he punted it. And it would have like hardly any spin on it. And it was just a hard punt to handle. Brett Kern was able to give the Titans returners an opportunity to see what that was like because it was one of the things that he had in his repertoire. And it's just really impressive, just all the things that he was able to do as far as knowing how to slice the punt to different directions. And actually, he made Craig Aukerman's job a lot easier because it was one of those plug-and-play situations. Like, you could just – it's like cooking in a crock pot, right? You set it and forget it. He's going to go ahead and do what he has to do. Here's Craig Aukerman from last year talking about Brett Kern, and we got the little golf analogy in there too.
What he needs to do as far as when we tell him to try to kick the ball close to the sideline, he understands that he has a certain line to get to, and he'll pick out some place on the football field where he'll have his line, whether it's whole body or it's footwork and things like that, but without giving away too much of his secrets, you know, he just does such an excellent job of pinning teams on the sideline and just makes them tough for them to return.
In talking to him in the past, he said he's compared it to golf. Is that a parallel that you could make?
Oh, man, he loves to talk about golf.
Yes, he does.
Me, on the other hand, I'm terrible at it. You know, I got a terrible slice, so I really can't really comprehend some things that he says about his swing, which is a lot better than mine. But yeah, it's a similar type of mindset, you know, and it's the same swing over and over and over again that he's obviously done a really good job with. Not to say that he's perfected it, but he continues to have a smooth swing, and obviously he does certain things to help him out with that.
So that was Craig Aukerman on Brett Kern. And when you look at this guy, like, it's not normal that we'll open the show and spend a whole segment talking about a punter. But Brett Kern wasn't a normal punter. In fact, I remember Dean Pease back in 2019. He called Brett Kern a defensive MVP. That was something that, you know, he said it laughingly, but his point was made because it was talking about how the defense, you know, was able to get some early stops in a game and how much Brett Kern putting them, you know, pinning the opposing team back, how much that helped the defense. And when you look at Brett Kern, look, this is the most accomplished punter in team history, one of the franchise's longest tenured player. In fact, no player in the Titans era has played more games. Franchise records in every major punting category, 3 consecutive Pro Bowls, first team AP All-Pro. I believe he was a second team All-Pro as well. You name it, this guy did it. And it's just really, really with him out off the field as well. You know, there's been influence there. He does a lot in the community. His family has become a part of the community. You know, he had his son there at his son Bryce at Titans camp, you know, mixing it up with the fans in addition to catching the balls and doing stuff, you know, during practice. It was cool to see that as well. And this is just a guy, like, he became an institution of the Tennessee Titans. So I wanted to make sure that we took some time to give him a shout out. One of the funniest videos that I remember is the one where Jeffrey Simmons came off the field last year and Kern tried to give him a high five and he just kind of walked by him because he was in his zone. And Kern just left his hand there. And then he told him, you know, if you ever come off the field and don't give me a high five, it's going to be a problem or something along those lines. I thought that was funny. And ironically, on Wednesday when Simmons was asked about Brett Kern, he said that he's always going to remember the smile and the jokes that he played. He's going to remember the high fives coming off the field and those type of things. So make no mistake about it, he left an impact on pretty much everybody on the team. In fact, here's Taylor Lewan, who now is the longest tenured Titans player.
You know, you go back to 14 and 15, my first 2 years here, where you win 5 games.
Yeah.
So finding chances and having the personnel and having the coaching staff to put us in situations to win the game has probably been the biggest thing that's changed the most. The locker room's changed, the kitchen's changed, the meeting room's changed, and everything is completely different when I walked in here 9 years ago. And, you know, there's a level of just gratitude that I just don't have the words to describe to even be a part of the team. I just, being a part of this and being a Tennessee Titan, you know, I just don't know if there's no other place I'd play for it.
So that's Taylor Lewan on the value of being a Titan and what has changed since he came in when Brett Kern was there. Here is Lewan actually on Brett Kern.
It's an accomplishment for anybody to be somewhere for a long time. And I'm obviously extremely grateful being a part of this team. But, you know, you love Brett, man. Brett's been a staple of this team for so long, and we've all, like, cared and loved him so much. And he's definitely going to be missed. I think he's definitely... I talked to him in the last preseason game, and, you know, the writing was sort of on the wall. And he, you know... Brett is a guy that lives his life and speaks the same way, which is a very rare thing for anybody to be able to do. The way he goes about his life, he walks the same talk that he does. And so I will always have the utmost respect for Kern. I love him to death and hope the best for him.
So that's Lewan on Brett Kern. And just to kind of put a bow around it, Brett Kern, in addition to off the field and on the field, spiritually, he was pretty much the leader of that clubhouse, right? And he was someone who conducted Bible study before, you know, when they had the team Bible study. He was the leader of that. And Kevin Byard, and you all know Kevin Byard is a leader on that team, but he said that he thanked Brett Kern. He was thankful for Brett Kern for how he was able to have an influence on him spiritually. And it was actually Byard who told us that Brett Kern was the leader, you know, as far as conducting Bible study and those type of things for the guys in the locker room. Now that he's gone, it's probably going to fall to Ben Jones, who also was someone that, you know, helped with the Bible study part of things, as did Byard. Byard said he's going to take a step back and let Jones go ahead and be the leader. So I just wanted to get into just a little bit about Ben Jones. It's only right, like, we give that man a shout out, all the things that he did. I mean, we're talking about ending the Patriots dynasty with his punt. You look at so many times he set the team up, just literally flipping the field. And, ooh, he was a sacrificial lamb on on one play where they ran the fake punt. And yeah, he got walloped. I think it was Devin White that got him. But, hey, at the end of the day, he spent, you know, a large amount of time here with the Titans. He's still there lurking in the wings, right? They gave him 16 footballs and a couple dollars. I'm not sure what the compensation is to stay close. I mean, you could tell that he did not want to leave the Nashville community. But you know what? Matter of fact, let's hear from Brett Kern real quick. Just on the competition itself. We'll end it with a quote from Kern.
I knew it was different when I first saw him punt a ball in April. I knew that it was going to be a grind. You know, I've told him I've been in the league a long time, and I've seen about three or four people in my entire life hit a ball like he does. So I knew it was going to be hard. I knew what he was really good at. I'm probably not, and what I'm really good at, he's, you know, he just needs some work on it. So it was just kind of back and forth a lot, and gave it all I had, and we'll see what happens.
Sorry I came in late. Were you a little bit sentimental tonight on the off chance that it's...
Yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, you don't know. I mean, if I'm here, then I probably overreacted, and if I'm not, then I definitely probably underreacted. So, you know, I mean, I'm just thankful for whatever happens. If I'm here, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to roll. If I'm not... you know, I'm beyond blessed with the years that I've been here and the friendships that I've made, the brothers that I have for the rest of my life. So I'm extremely thankful for that.
There you have it right there. Brett Kern, kind of his outro. This was after the Cardinals game. That was courtesy of Paul Kaharsky. What more can you say? End of an era. We're going to go ahead and go to a break, come back, and we got to get into these rosters. Just take a look at that. We'll be right back.
This is Chico Conquo, and I'm talking with TD.
Yeah. Little Brooklyn Zoo. ODB. Back from the break, talking with TD. Yeah, you know me. All right, man, that's the bars for today, man. Just had to give you a couple. Now, all jokes aside, I wanted to pick that song Brooklyn Zoo because that's kind of what it was like as the Titans were sorting through getting their 80-man roster down to 53, man. It was a lot of cuts that had to be made and some surprises. I think when you look at overall, there's depth and versatility there. And some of the players, you know, whether it's Lonnie Johnson Jr., you know, Ugo Amadi, when you're talking about a guy like Torrey Carter, you know, these are guys that fill multiple spots. And you'll say, hey, how does Torrey Carter fill multiple spots? Well, it's pretty easy. He plays all the special teams, but obviously a fullback. But in the Bucs game, he lined up as some tight end there. So I think when you look at this, there are some surprises, right? I didn't think Theo Jackson would have gotten cut. I thought that he would, you know, somehow manage to make the roster, but it didn't happen. Now, of course, they were able to bring him back on the practice squad. So that was a surprise. Joe Jones was a surprise for me. I thought he did enough, especially when you look at the hustle play he had against the Cardinals. We're talking Andy Isabella. He's a 4-3-8 guy. Caught the ball, ran down the field. Joe Jones from the linebacker position ran down and caught him at the 2-yard line. just the effort. And I remember watching the play and just seeing him flash into the screen. I'm like, oh, he's not giving up. And, oh, he's getting – he got him. That was really a surprise. But it wasn't just that. He was consistently filling against the run. He's around the football a lot. Rashad Weaver had the tip pass against the Bucks, and he intercepted that. So you were just able to see him be able to make a lot of plays, you know, but it's a numbers game. It is what it is. They talked very fondly of Jack Gibbons as well. I thought Dr. Jack, as Mike Vrabel called him, I thought that he might have made the roster, but that did not happen. We talked about Brett Kern and that one. Another one that surprised me was David Anenye, because this guy was consistently making plays also. Now, Mike Vrabel did say that there were some things when he was asked about Anenye as well as Rashad Weaver. He said they had to do a little bit of better job of you know, containing. Well, Anenye, he said that, actually, about setting the edge and containing. So maybe that's something that ended up being a detriment to him and cost him from being able to make the roster. Des Fitzpatrick was somewhat surprising. It just doesn't seem to get right for him as far as how coming out of training camp has worked. This back-to-back years of being cut, but they got him on the practice squad as well. So they were able to do those things. I think, you know, overall, looking at the roster, there's numbers-wise, you know, the cornerback position is interesting, right? Because you got Trey Avery who made the roster. Shout out to Trey Avery, coming out of nowhere, undrafted free agent, you know, just doing his thing. They like his length, and he competed. You know, he had a couple of times where he got beat, but what corner doesn't? But he was able to stick on the roster. So you got Trey Avery, Roger McCreary, Caleb Farley, Elijah Molden, Christian Fulton. Obviously, those other four that I mentioned were there, but Chris Jackson didn't make the roster. That was yet another surprise. But here's the thing. I mentioned the versatility aspect, and I think really – what caused some of these guys, like a Chris Jackson, what caused a Theo Jackson, what caused these guys to be released, I think, was Lonnie Johnson and Ugo Amadi. Ugo has the ability to play nickel. That's something that they talked about when I asked Mike Vrabel about that. He said he showed that. And just the way he came in and you know, was able to catch on and make some plays. So that versatility there. But then you look at Lonnie Johnson. And that's the thing I like about Lonnie Johnson is the fact that he has that versatility, but he really came in and hit the ground running. So I talked to him on Wednesday in the locker room. Here's a conversation I had with Lonnie Johnson.
As far as you being here, I know you weren't in Houston with Coach Vrabel, but was there any familiarity with the system itself?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of familiar stuff with the system. That's why it was kind of easy to pick up here. Like Forrest Vrabel, he recruited me in high school, so that's the connection between me and him.
Okay, so there was already a relationship.
Yeah.
And what about Coach Mitch? I know you played for him there in Houston as well.
That was my DB coach in Houston, and then Bobby was a linebacker coach in Houston, so you got a lot of familiar faces over there, so now that we all over here, you know, we're just ready to work on the same team.
This organization, they obviously value versatility. That's something that you bring. Mm-hmm. Playing corner and safety. If you could look back to Houston, like what was behind the switch to go to?
It was honestly like OB. He had made that move from the beginning, like to try me out at safety, and then like it was never really something that I just really couldn't do. It was more on just learning it. So now that I'm actually just playing safety, and God has given me talents to play multiple positions on the back end, it's just been an additional blessing, you know. So honestly, just ready to do whatever they want me to do here, and having versatility is just an additional blessing, like I said.
So that was Lonnie Johnson talking about the versatility that he brings. I thought he was a pretty solid corner coming out of Kentucky. For whatever reason, with Houston, he ended up not playing that position and shifted over to safety. But nevertheless, here he is after a stint. I believe it was Kansas City. After, you know, a brief stint there, you know, he was waived, and now he's on the Titans 53, and he's back reunited with Anthony Midgett, his DB coach in Houston. And as you heard him say, Mike Vrabel was a guy that recruited him coming out of high school. Vrabel did a lot of recruiting. That's funny, but hey, I mean, now he's a head coach. John Robinson, I spoke about the versatility with Ugo and Lonnie Johnson Jr. And here's John Robinson on the late additions and how they did enough in such a quick turnaround to impress him.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, Theo missed a little bit of time there in the middle of training camp. We were able to get Lonnie in here. You know, he's got a unique skill set in that he's played corner and he's played safety. He's a really long player. He's a fast player. He's an explosive player. He did some things in the kicking game in the preseason that, you know, that kind of caught our eye. And we think he can play, you know, a couple different spots. Theo's really improved. Glad that Theo's back with us on the practice squad. I keep working with him. He's working at a couple different positions too. And Ugo, you know, he was here for like 2 or 3 days. You know, he certainly had a lot of film in his time in Seattle. Briefly there with Philly, they kind of played him down there in the nickel role. And then, you know, when we got him here, he played in the game and was productive in what we asked him to do. So his ability to, I would say, transition to what we do and learn and execute pretty quickly certainly bode well for him.
So that was John Robinson on the two newcomers who impressed quickly. I was surprised that Theo Jackson didn't make it, though. And I thought that he was going to come in and be someone to kind of take that Dane Cruikshank role on. Maybe Lonnie Johnson to take that role. I don't know. We'll see how they work that out. But, you know, the good thing with Lonnie Johnson, he has that cornerback ability, right? 6'2", 214. As you heard Robinson mention, he's a long player. I've seen him in person. Like, you really recognize that. Some guys, like, you don't see that as much, but I definitely saw that with him. One of the other things that surprised me, and I had originally had them keeping 5 running backs, right? But I had Trenton Cannon as the 4th pure running back with a fullback in Torrey Carter. But one guy that just continued to impress, he over and over again, was Julius Chestnut. Yeah, he had the fumble in the game. He had a fumble in practice. But he just bounced back every time. And the thing that really, you know, just seeing him quickly. Now, my guy, Emory Hunt, football game plan, I'll shout him out because he told me to watch out for this guy. He was like, hey, man, this dude from Sacred Heart, he's nice. And I said, okay, no problem. I watched him. And really what stood out to me quickly was his footwork. You know, he had really sweet feet to be a bigger back because he's let me just look it up to get his exact size. But I was just impressed because you could tell he's big in the just looking at him. Like, you could tell he's a bigger guy, you know what I mean? But we're talking about someone that is listed at, 5'11", 228. You know, that's pretty good size there. And he's nowhere near as big as Natron Means, but he looks bigger in his pads. And that made me say, you know what? This guy, he reminds me of Natron Means. I asked him about that in the locker room. Now, Natron Means was, you know, a good 17 pounds heavier, but still, we're just talking about style. It's just the way they looked in the pads. Here's Julius Chestnut. I had a conversation with him on our Wednesday.
What was it about the Titans that drew you to them to want to sign with them as an undrafted free agent?
When I had first talked to Coach Vrabel, you know, he told me how much of a family-oriented organization this is, and you know that's why I base my life off of a family, and I take that to heart really. So you know, I talked to him about that, and they told me that their plans for me, you know, just come in here and compete, and everybody get an opportunity. So that's really it.
To be a guy coming from Sacred Heart, at what point like did you get that I belong moment?
You know, I always knew I belong.
There you go.
That's always been my thing since I was younger. My parents told me to never, first of all, never let somebody tell you that you can't do something. But then, you know, you're there for a reason. You know, they picked me and they told me I should come in and I have an opportunity. You know, and that just showed me that I do belong. You know, so that's what it is.
And watching you, even in OTAs and in mini camp, a name that came to my mind quickly was Natron Means. I don't know if you've ever watched him, but have you gotten that comparison before?
I never gotten that comparison. Actually, my college coach actually compared someone else in my running back room to him. So when I heard that, it rung a bell in my head. But I do know who that is. Yeah.
Any backs? Bowie, Maryland, you're from, right? Yeah. Any backs in particular you watched when you were coming up?
I grew up a Steelers fan, so I used to watch Jerome Bettis a lot, and Le'Veon Bell was more my era. But I still love people like Adrian Peterson, you know, growing up, and Jamal Charles, not really my type of back, but you know, he was really
hard not to like. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But man, it's so many backs I can name off the top of my head, but yeah.
So, obviously, he's well versed in the game, right? To know who Natron Means was. I mean, this is a young fella, but he knew who that was. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was a good conversation with him, just a vibe in the locker room, man, that Wednesday. You know, some of the guys that obviously felt that they were going to make it but were on the bubble, you know, just to see the temporary relief that they had, it was cool. We'll see how this thing continues to fluctuate, though, you know, because it's the 53-man is not something that's written in etched in stone, as Nick Westbrook and Kenny would say, it's written in sand. Thought that was a good analogy that he made when he was asked about the starting lineup, but just the same, the 53-man is. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. You got my understanding of the 53-man roster. Let's get Chris Sanders next.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
That just hit so hard. I always want to just let that ride. We're going to cut it short. Because you know what's going on. The lights dim. Music fades. The energy is in the air. Feel it. Energize. And now, starting at shooting guard for your Portland Trailblazers, number 22, Clyde,
oh, wow.
The Clyde Drexler.
And now, starring as himself, nicknamed TD, Teron Davenport. You is yourself, man.
That's how you make the crowd roar.
I know.
That's exactly how you do it.
What's up, big dog, man? You digging all these fixes going on? Did the Tennessee Titans let go or care? What you think about all this stuff that's going on, man?
Yeah, there's a lot of up and down. I actually went over that on the previous segment. I kind of gave my overview of the initial 53-man roster, and there's some interesting things. Julius Chestnut was one of the ones that stood out.
Yeah.
There were a few. They got to hear that in the last segment, so I think it's about time to – go ahead and look at yours. But first, let's address the news that happened on Thursday, mm-hmm. which was most significant. And that is Josh Gordon signed to the practice squad. Now, obviously, the practice squad spot is a lot different from the 53-man roster. Racy McMath was placed on IR with a hip injury. And Cody Hollister was signed to the 53-man roster to replace McMath's spot. So they're carrying five receivers. Mm-hmm. But you do have Josh Gordon there that could fluctuate up and down. But what are your thoughts on the Josh Gordon signing first? We'll start there.
At first I was, like, confused because, you know, you got Des Fitzpatrick, you got Reggie Roberson, and you got Cody Hollister that can come in and play. But I think the reason why they signed Josh is because they wanted a guy that can go get the ball downfield. I mean, because if you look at the roster, who's a speed guy in there? They had Racy McMath that can take the top off the defense, run a post, run a go route. They can get behind the defender. So it was kind of confusing at first because you already have these other guys. But I think they need a speed guy to go down there and make that tough, tough catch. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, do you think that Josh Gordon could still be that guy, though?
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't know because if you look at last year, you know, he only caught five passes. Then the year before that, he caught 7 and 20. So you're not gonna light up the board if you're not getting downfield and making some plays downfield because he's known to do that. He did it at Cleveland, and he made some big plays there. But just like what you said, Titty, is he still that guy? Is can he get behind the DB? Can he run the post? Can he run the go route? We know he's a big enough body to catch the slam, but we got guys to do that. We got Kyle Phillips. We got some other receivers to catch those intermediate routes. But we need a guy to take the top off the defense because we lost that when we lost Racy McMath.
Yeah, having him placed on the IR, that really
hurt them. When did he get hurt?
I'm not sure because he played in parts of the game on last Saturday, the Cardinals game. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but I don't think it's one of those, trying to stash a guy to save a roster spot thing either because, it wasn't like they were trying to put Cody Hollister on the 53, right. Man, but they had to get him on there, to fill the spot. So I'm confused about that, but nevertheless, here they are. Once again, lacking a true deep threat, and I think that's the issue.
Yeah, but can we talk about Traylon Burks. Can he be that guy? In Arkansas, we saw him run by people when he's running, screens, but can he run by somebody that has tight coverage? Can he get that second gear to get behind the defender? So I don't know. I mean, yeah, he can get some intermediate routes, the back shoulders, all those are great, but can you get behind the defender? And I want to see if he can actually do that.
Yeah, I don't think they have a legitimate guy that at the beginning of each week they say, hey, look, we're not going to let so-and-so beat us deep. Right. We're going to do everything we can, but he's not beating us deep. They don't have that. And that's something that they're going to have to, at some point, find a way to get because, not every team has it, but at some point they got to get somebody that's a threat to stretch, at least a threat to stretch the field. They don't really have that. But when you look at the 53-man roster overall, let's get into surprises. Surprise guy that made it overall, or even a surprise position, a depth there, or anything like that.
And we've been talking about this all in OTAs and in camp. The one guy that I'm surprised who made it was Dylan Radins. Everybody talking about his struggles. Everybody was talking. I understand depth and everything, but you brought some guys. You got a guy from Carolina to be at that position. Also, I don't understand why they kept Radins. Because he doesn't count that much towards the cap. So even though he, everybody said he wasn't that guy to play right tackle, but then if he's not that guy, then why are you keeping him on the 53? That's just my thought. You can help me out with that.
You don't think they should keep him just as a swing tackle, just because he could play left and right tackle and also left and right guard, like that versatility?
Yeah. But the thing about it is, if he gets in there, Can he can play all those positions, but can he be effective? You know what I'm saying? That's kind of why I look at it. You want guys on the 53 that if somebody goes down that you don't lose a step. And I think that, and I say that in a respectful way, but I think that if one of those offensive linemen got hurt and he had to jump in there and play, it's gonna be a downgrade. And I hate to say that because you want to have a situation to where and if somebody gets hurt, they can come in. Just like last year when a lot of the linemen got hurt, you got Dennis Kelly that was in there. They came in there, and you didn't miss a beat. So that's kind of why I say that.
So are there any linemen that you felt should have made it before him?
Like, we can say Jordan Roos, but, I don't know. I just think that I would have let him go and added somebody somewhere else, like Chris Jackson, kept him at defensive back as opposed to keeping him. That's it. That's just my opinion.
Okay, so it would have been another position.
At another position. DBs, because, everybody knows that Caleb Farley's going to play, and I don't know if he's going to start. I don't know if McCurry's going to start. But just say if Caleb Farley hurts the knee again or he hurts his back, then, who else are you going to have to really, really come in to really play the position? Because Chris Jackson played a lot.
Yeah, he did. He did. And one of the things I know they're looking at is Ugo Amadi. Kind of versatility where he could play nickel, and that could give you McCreary to fill in for Farley, or Fulton if something happens there.
Right.
Then you got Molden. So it's the DB position is interesting because you got the versatility. Because you also I talked to Lonnie Johnson on Wednesday, and I tell you what, like just standing there face to face, man, that is a long DB.
He's a long dude. That's what you need.
Oh, he is. Yeah, I was really surprised because. When you're on the side and you're watching, you can't really truly grasp the guy, his size. But, I was like, man. So that's another one that they could play at corner. He was actually a pretty solid corner coming out of Kentucky. But I get what you're saying, just to move it back to Radiance. I get what you're saying about him. I just wonder, you know, with him being a second-round pick, I know obviously he's not going to, for now, feel that potential. But I just wonder if that's one of those things where it's like, okay, well, let's hold on and just see if we could at least get a reserve out of this guy.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, you know, Mike, Coach Vrabel and Jay Rob, you know, they make those tough decisions. I mean, if you look at last year, you know, when you cut a fourth rounder, and they brought Des Patrick back, but if they have that mindset to where we got to have guys that we know they can play this game, we looked at OTAs, we looked in camp, we looked at all the practices that Radiant has, and there was consistently no improvement. So, I'm being careful when I say that because, you know, I'm not talking about the man. I'm talking about the position.
The performance on the field.
The performance.
Yeah, you separate the two.
But his performance wasn't up to a level to where they need him. Because, everybody talks about the 49ers game last year that he held his own. He really didn't.
He got help.
He got help. See, he got help. And then you look at practice, when I went to practice a couple of weeks ago and I watched him, I mean, you're talking about he's getting manhandled. And you can't have that. When you're talking about going against the elite, you know, rushers in the league, I mean, look at who the Tennessee Titans got to play. They got to play the Raiders. They got to play the Bills. I mean, they got some pass rushers that are going to get in your mustache.
Yeah, even the Giants, week one.
Even the Giants.
I know if their guys could be healthy. So
yeah.
So, okay, so Raiders was your surprise make on the roster.
Yes.
Who was your surprise cut? Was it Chris Jackson?
No, my surprise cut was Kern. You know, because it's funny because I got in an argument with somebody in the gym. They're like, oh, man, it's just a punter. And, you know, you can always replace him. I said, no, hold on.
Right.
Let me tell you something. I said Kern wasn't just a punter. He was a game changer. And when I talk about a game changer, let me take you back in history. In 2019, when they were playing the Cleveland Browns, it's a minute and 42 before the half. The Cleveland Browns kind of have momentum, whatever. Kern kicks it to the 3-yard line. Mm-hmm. What happens? Tennessee Titans get a safety. All of a sudden, the momentum shifts. They go in the locker room feeling good. Another one, last year, 2021, the Rams were up 3-0. Rams had the momentum. It's second period. Kern kicks it to the 3-yard line. A play goes by. Next thing you know, Kevin Long gets an interception. David Long gets an interception. That shows you that Kern is not just a punter. He is a game changer because those two games alone that I just talked about changed the game.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You could even look at the late in the Patriots game that same season, 2019, when, you know, he, in essence, ended it for them.
Yeah, it's like we focus so much on, okay, somebody booted a 70-yard punt, which is great, outstanding. But if he kicks it in the end zone, it comes out to the 20.
Yeah.
See?
Exactly. That's why I'll be honest, on my 53-man, I had Kern making it. Because you still have the directional ability. You know.
Yeah, but here's the, I don't mean to cut you off, TD. Why don't you do this? Why don't you keep Kern on there, and I let go rate it, and keep Stonehouse on the practice squad?
Man, you're sounding like Jarrett Stillman.
Oh, did he say that? No.
Yeah.
Did he? Oh no.
And he said cut rate. Those all were three. That's three moves he said to make.
Don't call me. I don't even look like that dude. I'm a little prettier, man. Yeah, but what do you think about this situation?
Kern is someone that clearly established himself as one of the best players on the team over the last decade. And
right. What
Dean Pease calls him, albeit with a smile, calls him the defensive MVP, that lets you know the value that he brings.
Yep.
And that's something that he did say, I think it was 2020. But, 2019, excuse me. But nevertheless, I think it's a move that they made just because they were nervous about longer term. Kern, I think he has one, maybe 2 years left, and they just were like, all right, we'll cut the tie now while we have someone who we believe can give a similar output. That's what they were, in my opinion, that's what they said to themselves. Stonehouse had a really good game against the Cardinals, punting. He actually showed the ability to put that English on the ball and make it, you know, down inside the 10-yard line. But
right,
Kern,
yeah,
he downs it inside the 5.
See, that's the
and
difference.
And that's the thing. So, yeah, I get what you're saying there.
And then another thing, too, man, is we always talk about, you know, ball handling. He dropped a couple now.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? You know, that might be, You can get away with it in preseason and all that stuff, but teams are going to salivate to try to put pressure on Stonehouse. So I'm not saying he can do it and you know that he can't be a great punter, but right now you got to find every edge to win. And I think when we played those tough teams, where there's a defensive battle, offensive battle, Kern made a difference and put the defense in a great position.
No doubt about it. Anything else surprise you on there, like any – depth at a position, seven defensive linemen or anything along those lines?
No. I mean, everybody knows that it was a surprise, but it was a surprise where they made Malik Willis the second quarterback. I mean, at the beginning of OTAs and the beginning of all those other camps, everybody was looking at there's no way that Willis is going to take the second spot. So I think it was very surprising that, you know, that Willis played a lot in the last game, because I think they were feeling like, okay, this kid is getting better and better each and every practice, each and every game. He's doing the things that he's been coached on. So I think that was a surprise, but it wasn't a surprise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely makes sense, because, you know, when you think about the progress, and the thing that I really liked about that is there was progress in exact plays.
Absolutely.
Right situations. The play action glance route. He didn't throw it to Des Fitzpatrick against the Ravens. Mm-hmm. First play of the game against the Bucs was what? Play action glance. He let the trigger. He now was a little behind him, but Westbrook Ikhine still made the catch. Progress, right? In that Bucs game, Treylon Burks running a crossing route. He had to clear out on the left, and the two receivers on the right, they ran in breaking routes, you know, to take the coverage that way. You had nothing but air and opportunity. Burks crossed over that second hash. Malik looked at him, tucked it, dumped it off. I think it was to Torrey Carter. Mm-hmm. Next play, he hung in the pocket and delivered a strike to Chig Okonkwo for the touchdown.
Yeah. But
what happened in Arizona? You have pressure bearing down on him. Similar concept. It wasn't the same play. Similar concept. Mason Kinsey cleared out on the left. The two receivers on the right, they cleared it out. Crossing route for Burks.
Mm-hmm.
With Myjai Sanders bearing down on him, he hung in the pocket, changed the trajectory of the ball, somehow got it to him, right on the run, he caught it, touchdown. That's progression in the exact mistake from the previous week.
Yeah.
You got to be impressed with that.
But, you know, I agree with you 110%, but you know what's cool about the whole thing is he's very, very coachable. When I say he's very, very coachable, all during practice, Coach Mike Vrabel, Todd Downing, and J-Rob was consistently telling him, keep your eyes downfield.
Yep.
Even when you scramble, keep your eyes downfield. Keep your eyes downfield. If you look at the first game to the third game, he looks like a totally different player because he's keeping his eye downfield and not just taking off running on the first read.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we'll see how this roster continues to evolve. Obviously, this is probably not going to be the final one that you're going to see, but there's plenty that could change, and we'll see how that continues to go. But yeah, man, appreciate getting to talk shop once again. We had to shift it around a little bit,
but,
you know, call an audible. We made it happen. We tapped the top of the helmet. You know what that means.
Hey,
go
man,
routing. If I'm even, I'm leaving.
Absolutely. Hey, I was coaching at Pearl Cone, man, and some of the kids came up to me like, man, your show with TD Man is amazing. They was like, man, he looks like Lionel Richie, Al Jarreau, or Sam Cassell. I said Sam Cassell, and they all stood up and gave a standing ovation. Man, congratulations.
That's crazy, because I was watching a movie today with Kevin Hart in it, and it's called Me Time, and he had a surprise guest play at his party, and I was, you know, my girl looked, she was like, ain't that the guy that you do the show with? It looks just like him. You know who the guest was?
Who was it?
Seal.
Oh. Man, get off my phone, man. I'm out on that one. Peace.
So that was Chris Sanders giving his take on the 53-man roster, even though he looks like Seal. Had to sneak that one in there. David James, appreciate you making this thing happen, man. This was a dope show, man. We got a lot of sound in there, so thanks for mixing that in. Thanks to each of you for tuning in and rocking with us each and every week. By the time this next episode comes out, we will be leading into the opening game of the season. How about that? We'll talk a little Giants, get into that. Make sure you stay tuned. Whiteboard Wednesday will be coming for a preview of the game as well. So check that out. ESPN.com, click Titans, or click team, then Titans, and you get all the work there. And as always, check us out. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get your fine podcasts. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you. And can't forget 102.5 The Game, thegamenashville.com.